Welcome to another episode of Som and Sommer with Floyd and Aaron. On today's show, we are going to taste test Miami Pinot Noir. This is how we roll. I always have to be corrected, but we are going to be drinking Miami.
look at the back of the bottle, Floyd. Look at the back of the bottle. See where it says they even pronounce it for you.
Miami.
No,
I'm going to stick with it.
May owe me. It literally has it in parentheses.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
So we are going to be taste testing and discussing Miami from California. And it's a wine that everybody knows and loves and always talks about, Aaron. So I think we should just kind of dive right into it. Not waste any time. We got to get to this stunner of a wine. We've heard so much about it. So I think what we should do is we get our glass, we get our bottle of wine, and we crack it open, kind of like a 40-ounce because it's a screw top, and we pour it in our glass.
Yeah, nothing classy about this. It's just, it literally tells you which way to screw it off.
It gives you directions on how to do that.
let's take a whiff of the bottle first. That is like such a creamy kind of approach right there, and it's like I already know what I'm in for right now.
Oh, this is Josh
2.0.
1.0. This is 1.5.
I like that nose. It's kind of like Steve Buscemi in Wedding Singer. I like her. This has got one of those crazy, like, I can't smell grapes. I can smell where somebody went into the factory and just said, all right, we're going to mix some chemicals together. No. I want this strawberry cotton candy. I want some milk in there. I want some dairy. There's something about Camus. They love experimenting with this idea of like really smooth, creamy notes off the bat. Do you sort of get that, like that kind of that milkiness when you smell it?
Sorry, man. On this one, that nose, it brings me back to one of our old episodes that we talked about, Lethal Weapon. I feel like Danny Glover right now is like, I have 2 days to retirement and I'm going to drink this. Something bad's going to happen with this.
Oh, no. I disagree with you. This is beautiful.
No, that's we're back to Cento. But let's do the proper thing. Let's pour it in our glass, number one. The second thing, which is let's smell it out of the glass, because I know you smelled it out of the bottle.
Yeah, and like I said, this is strong. there ain't no confusing this, right? I'm getting strong strawberry cream, like almost like I think I had strawberry and cream oatmeal today, and it's the same goddamn thing.
Wow, I'm getting strawberry, like strawberry preserves, like really sugary strawberry preserves, like really heavy. I'm getting jam on the nose. Like I have a feeling like this is going to be a chewable wine. Like this is going to be something like I'm going to chew through.
And I'm so glad we got half bottles with this, because there's no way in hell. Like I'm afraid to take my first sip right now, just because I know that this is going to be screw it.
I think we've learned our lesson from Cali Red and Josh, where we bought a full bottle each and had to finish the rest. But let's I'm getting – this is
– This is dairy farm stuff, man. This is all cream. This is all milk. This is where we stop talking about terroir. We stop talking about earthiness. We stop talking about jammy black fruit. And we just talk about the Camus approach to making wine here.
This is very interesting. Like on the palate, man, it feels like
finish too, right?
Yeah. It has a lingering finish.
Yeah.
It's kind of like your word is obnoxious. It's like somebody took two slices of bread, put strawberry jam on it, and then took a sugar packet and poured it and just sprinkled it on top. It just has this mouthfeel that's very sugary, high in sugar. Like, it's just something about it that's, I'm getting like strawberry. I'm getting like just dark, dark, like ripe, super ripe fruit. I don't know. Like,
it's not the fruit that's bothering me on this one. It's more the fact that there's a style of making this where I sort of feel like, well, first of all, let's talk about the color a little bit, right? I don't mind the color on this. It's got like this nice ruby sort of look to it. Kind of ruby, getting a little bit towards like light violet. Not as see-through as I'd imagine this to be, right? Like I thought this would be a little more translucent, but this, I mean, in general, it has a nice color to it. It's pleasant to look at. It's not the wine that I remember from 2015, 2016, but it is also not the wine that I remember from 2019. Every single time that I have Meiomi, I have a different experience with it. And there's certain wines that are like this.
I think this wine, it's like, you're right with the color. Like, Pinot Noirs, you should be able to kind of look through a little bit. You know what I mean? It should be a little bit lighter on the lighter side.
Yeah.
This one has a lot of, like, the legs are just stained. They're slow to go down. This is like, it's like sticking to the glass, really. It's like almost like a, like paint, almost like plaster, kind of just really sticking. And yeah. It's everything I thought it was going to be. Like, I went into this review of this wine saying to myself, this is a wine that I know what I'm getting myself in for. Like, mm-hmm. I know we talked about it. We're like, what's our next review? And I remember we talked about Miami. We picked up the half bottle. But what's interesting about this wine, it has changed. I don't know. Years ago, I drank this. It wasn't this jammy. It wasn't like this heavy of a wine. Like, looking on the back of it, it's like it's wine. It's grapes from three counties in California. So there, if you look at the bottle.
So it's a Pinot blend.
It's a Pinot blend. It's like a, you know, vineyard blend. So it's like Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and Sonoma. So for people out there, and it's, I'll say it one more time. It's Monterey County, which is 59%, Santa Barbara, which is 22%, and Sonoma, which is 19%. So Sonoma County is just above Napa, right? It's right on that top. Then you have Monterey, which is kind of right below like San Francisco. Then you have Santa Barbara, which is below that. So it's like all these different, let's just say, regions and plots. And think about like the weather that has to go into this one, right? You're talking about being a little bit up north where it's a little bit cooler. And as you travel down, the temperature is changing. So like this wine, there's something, it could be that. I think that's affecting this. Maybe it's the blends that they're doing with their percentages.
It's there's something that they're not telling us, right?
Like, there's something they're not telling us.
So Meiomi in Italian, I think it's Italian, by the way. Like, Meiomi in Chinese
means wrong.
No, Meiomi in Italian means coast. So
all right.
That's sort of the name meaning behind this wine. I think it's a fantastic success story of, you know, Camus in general, because I love the label. I've always loved the label. I think that it's kind of like you want to buy this wine and try it at least once in your life. I don't really give a shit about the bear. I don't know what the fuck the bear is about. I don't know why there's a bear sort of just chilling out and walking on the label of this, but I do like everything else about this wine. And if you go on Meiomi.com and you look at this Pinot Noir, first off, it says, discover the unrivaled taste of Meiomi Pinot Noir, a rich garnet color with a ruby edge. The wine opens to reveal lifted aromas of bright strawberry and jammy fruit, mocha and vanilla. That mocha and vanilla that I was talking about, by the way, that's sort of where I get that dairy feel, along with toasty oak notes, expressive boysenberry, blackberry, dark cherry, juicy strawberry, and toasty mocha flavors lend complexity and depth on the palate. The well integrated oak provides structure and depth, seldom seen in Pinot Noir. So these guys are really into themselves.
So this wine has every flavor known to man,
which I think is a bullshit thing that a lot of California Pinots do. They, especially when it belongs to the Wagner family, the guys that do Camus. And we're going to do an episode soon on Bella Gloss, which is sort of like the big brother, the better version of this. But I think they're not saying how this is made, though, which is kind of scary to me.
So we know, like, the big thing nowadays is whole cluster, right? We've talked about that on other episodes, right, where they throw everything in their batch. But if you had whole cluster, you would taste, like, it would be very dry. It would be a tannic wine, right? Like, this one, there's something about it that, like, I agree. They are not telling us. They must be putting, like, Zin in here. This has to be, like...
It's not Zin, dude.
It has to be something.
It's not Zin. I think that... I'm sort of getting into this right now and seeing if it's like,
because it has strawberry, it has cherry, it has blueberry jam, it has cocoa, it has this. Well, I can agree. It has those vanilla flavors and qualities because it's oaked, right? It's going to have those typical qualities, like when people love Chardonnays because it's buttery and oaky. That's where it's getting that flavor from, that oak. So I think this is like a heavily it's really, really oaked.
No, there's definitely oak integration in this for sure, but I'm not sure if we're talking like traditional oak or like oak chips. Before there was Napa, there was Meiomi. I'm just trying to look at more information that I can find on these guys. By 2015, Meiomi – okay, so – launched in 2006, Meiomi sold 90,000 cases by 2010. But by 2015, they sold 700,000 cases annually. So this is sort of validating everything I get into, where the more that you make this stuff, the more you have to sort of aim for this high volume production work.
Oh, most definitely.
Its parent company is Constellation Brands, and they're the same people who own Heineken, Opus One, and a whole bunch of different
Rufino. It's like Rufino, Orange, all these guys.
But I'm not seeing too much information out there on the actual winemaking process. And usually, when it comes,
what does that mean? What does that mean? We don't tell you everything about how it's made. What's the process? What does that usually mean?
When I'm smelling this right now, I know that there's some additive in here. This is not oak. This is not oak. This is some additive that they're using. Again, I'm going to say this about 8,000 times in the podcast. Creaminess. There's some kind of either malolactic fermentation, or there's some kind of X factor being put into this. So
stop lying to the people, man. Just keep it real. Keep it real.
No,
what's in here? What are you really getting? There's something in here, and you're absolutely right, man. There's something in here because, you know, for people out there that listen to the podcast,
it's not whole cluster, by the way.
It's definitely not whole cluster. You would be able to taste a whole cluster wine. Yeah,
you'd get grippy tannins.
It would bite you.
The only structure to this is that you have sweetness and you have creaminess. And I'm being honest, I don't know what they're doing to this. I don't hate it. But I will say I don't like Meiomi's consistency, because this is the third or fourth time I've tried Meiomi. The first time I thought it was sort of a medium to full bodied, very nice, almost Oregon like Pinot. And it had something to it where you could have it with a nice steak, or you could have it with a nice cut of meat. And there was not too much vanilla on it. There wasn't too much of this mocha on it. It was a nice Pinot. It was almost like the stuff that we have from Willamette Valley a lot of times. a little fruitier for Willamette Valley, but mind you, this was 2015, 2016. The next time I had it was 2019, and I had it because my sister was like, let's get Meiomi. I hear great things about it. I'm like, Meiomi is, you know, it's a wine that you can get anywhere. We got it anyway, and I thought it tasted way different than this. Almost rancid, like almost like there's no flavor there. It had sort of a putrid aftertaste to it. I thought it sucked. I thought it was awful. It didn't have any of this, though. This is sweeter than I remember it to be. When I had it 2 years ago, it was dry, flabby, shitty. I was like, this is fucking terrible. This is interesting. This is as if they said, listen, we're either going to decline as a company or we gotta keep on going for that American market and plump it up a little bit.
It's the American market. I was about to say, like, with California Cabernets, you just need 75% of the grapes to be Cabernet, to be classified as Cabernet Sauvignon. So you could mix anything in there. Like, I wonder if that's the case for this, because I've had this years ago and it wasn't like this. It wasn't this heavy. It wasn't this bulky. It wasn't this sugary. It was a decent Pinot Noir. And I think that once it caught on, and maybe they were running out of juice, who knows what the story is? Maybe they were running out of something to produce. I think they started learning about the American palate. I think they started to adjust to the American palate more and just started blending in grapes from different vineyards, three different vineyards, three different coastlines, three different temperatures, put them all together, add some coloring, add some wood chips, add everything in there for the customer to say, this is the greatest wine they've ever had.
So
because everybody talks about, everybody that comes in the store, you know this, I know this. Customers come in, do you have Meiomi? No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Why?
Why not? It's the best.
It's the best Pinot I've ever had.
And I go, sir, ma'am, come on, really? Like, have you had other Pinots? Oh no, but it's just there's something about it that I love. It's just so full. It's so rich. I'm like, that's not how a Pinot Noir should be, man. It's like I try to drive that home with people, and I just can't get through their sugary, clogged ears. Like, it's like, that's not how Pinot Noir should taste. It shouldn't be.
Pinot Noir needs to be something that is, I'll always say this term, but porch wine. You want to drink it and have these subtle flavors, but you know, it's something that you have as an easy sipper that you could have easily on a hot summer day, as well as a fall day, as well as a winter day. There's not a whole lot of heaviness to a Pinot Noir. It should be, there should be just the right amount of red fruit to it. But when you start seeing this kind of description, like, we have blackberry, we have boysenberry, we have vanilla, we have chocolate, I'm like, then it's not a Pinot anymore. You may be getting Pinot grapes, but what you're doing is there's really no art to what you're doing. You're just mashing a bunch of those grapes up and doing God knows what to it. So it's interesting, because when I had this, I was at a really nice restaurant in the city. And of course, I was looking at the wine menu, and we talk about this, how wine menus will have a $20 or $30 wine and it'll go for $50, $60, $70.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's generally what you want to do. So you never want to get like the lowest price wine on a wine list, because it's going to taste like dirt. You know, and a lot of really, really high-end restaurants, they'll serve you a $10 wine and ask you for $30 or $40. And you'll be like, why am I paying this? This was going for about $55. But I remember, maybe it was the fact that it was like a good enough date. Maybe it was a very nice meal. Maybe it was the ambiance. I liked it. I didn't mind spending the money. It was when I was with my mom and sister in Florida that I had this. I'm like, I wouldn't spend $10 on this shit. I don't know if this is the worst experience I've had with this, or if this is just like I'm in shock mode because I'm going from tasting mud to tasting strawberries and cream.
I got a theory why it probably tasted great on a date versus when you were with your mom and your sister. Oh, darling, this wine is phenomenal. For $55, you can't go wrong. Oh, and then your family are like, oh, this is dog shit. I could see why you were probably playing that card.
I
get it.
You're saying that because of the circumstances, I wanted to like it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you wanted to sell it.
Oh, this is the best Pinot I've ever had. Ooh. Well, no, because Bell Gloss was going for like 130, and I'm like, fuck that.
Do you know I'm a level one, and this is, oh, yes. I can see why you would sell it. I get the date part.
Oh, Mayomi, the love affair we have. Well, no, because maybe she didn't see the price of it on the wine list. I'm like, man, I guess this is what $3,000 gets you. So that kind of leads to my next question. When do you buy and when do you try Mayomi? When do you have this wine? Because I got to be honest, I'd projectile vomit in your face if you tried to serve this with cheese at like a cocktail party. I'd be like, bro, get that out of my face. Get me some buttercream Chardonnay instead.
Get me butternut chard. Listen, I think Floyd's going to keep it. I never do this. I don't like doing this. You know me. I don't really bash things. I don't go too crazy. This wine, man, it goes to everything we've done before. It goes to like Cali Red. It goes to Josh. What I've made those comments where I'm like, dude, this wine, it's a party wine. It is a wine that you serve when nobody has any palate left and people are drunk. This is the wine you actually serve to people. I'm sorry, man. I don't know what this would go with except like a big juicy steak, which it shouldn't go with. It's totally
opposite. No, it does not go with steak. Vanilla, no, I mean, vanilla like this does not go with steak.
I mean, like this is what you would say to somebody because it's so heavy. It's so rich. I don't know. I would say this is just a wine you would pass around at a party. You know, what's the best price I can get on 12 cases of this because I have 200 people showing up to my house? Oh, we'll give you the best case on Mayomi. We'll give you the best price on Mayomi. That's the only place I can see this. I really can't imagine going to dinner and saying, let's order the Mayomi. It'll go great with the pasta tonight. It'll go great with the salmon. No,
this would destroy Italian.
This would destroy. I think it's a wine that give me some hot wings. Give me some buffalo wings. Just give me Buffalo Wild Wings. I would be okay with this wine because it would take care of the heat. It's so heavy. It would blanket the heat and it would go with everything. I honestly, man, you're a little bit higher on it than me. I'm just not seeing. I get why people drink it. Trust me, I do. To people listening, I get why people would drink this, but I can't do it. I could not do it. It's too full body.
This is not really wine, people. It's not really wine. It's a mellow dessert. And that's not what Pinot Noir should be. There's a difference between candied fruit and just pure ass candy. So last two questions is
what do you got? What do you got?
What do you got for me? How would you rate this one?
Ooh. I would rate this wine. I'd give it like a if I was rating it. I would give it a 3. I'm at a 3. This is a party wine. This to me is a party wine.
I'd give it a 4. I'm a little bit warmer with this wine than you are because I tend to think that it's edible. Like
don't drink it, eat it.
No. You know, it's like we talk about sponsorship and working with different wine brands. I don't think I'd actually reach out to Mayomi and be like, hey, listen, I'm a big fan. can we sponsor your stuff? I mean, out of a possible 10, Floyd gave it a 3. I gave it a 4. This is to me a solid 4 just because the difference between what you said and what I'm about to say is that I think that you could actually lead off with this wine. Maybe pour half a glass and then say, listen, you know, do you like it or do you hate it? You get a consensus. Then, in my opinion, you're having this at room temperature right now, right?
Yeah.
I think that this needs to be chilled. I think that's the biggest mistake we made.
Cali Red. Come on, keep going. You're making my case, Cali Red.
No, but I think it needs to be chilled like it needs to be properly chilled. this is warm right now. I think that if you chill it down, you get more of what they're trying to do for the American public. If you had this at a tasting right now, like at Camus Vineyards, they'd present it in the best possible way that you'd say, oh, this is really good. It's refreshing. I think it's meant to start a tasting, not end one. But I think it needs to be, I think it needs to be cold to do that.
I see this as you walk into some gathering. People are just walking in with khakis. This is like somebody's getting married at a country club. And you just have this, and a waiter has it, a tray in their hand, just the glass is already filled. This is a starter. You said it. This is an appetizer kind of wine. It's a party type wine.
But you said end with it.
What do you mean? Oh, no. Or that's what I'm saying. I'm getting to that point too. It's like, this is like, this is a wine that if I had a party at my house and we're all kind of sloshing around, we're all drunk, our palates are shot, and somebody says, hey, man, let's have one more bottle of wine. I'd bring this out and say, let's finish the night with that, because nobody will be able to know the difference, taste the difference. They just want to drink a glass of wine. That's, you either start or you end with something like this. I don't say in the middle of a gathering, a family dinner, anything like that, let's pop open that Miami, man. Let's get it going with dinner tonight. No, I would say we're outside, we're hanging out. Hey, anybody else need a drink? Oh yeah, me. I can have a glass of wine. Oh yeah, I can have a glass of wine. All right, let me get the Miami out for everybody. Nobody knows what the difference is right now at this moment. Miami is it's that wine. Serve it at the beginning of a party. Serve it when everybody's drunk and they just want to hang out a little bit more and have another glass. That's why I'm just like, I'm shocked that people love it, because it's something that's the way I would recommend it to people. And I think it's going to lead me to my question to you is like, see, I would recommend this to people those two ways, right? You're either starting a party or you're ending a party. Somebody just needs an extra glass of wine. What would you recommend this to people? Long dramatic pause. I like your professional glass too. It's really cool. Your burgundy glass. Is that a burgundy glass there? No.
No, I would not.
There it is.
No, I would not.
There it
no,
is. Not. There it is.
No, I would not.
There it is. You're working too hard, man. At first, I thought you were leading us down this wrong path.
No, I would not. I would not recommend this wine. I think that this wine goes against everything that we believe in. I think it's just, I'm actually very happy right now. I probably don't sound like I'm happy, but I'm very happy right now because this experience sort of validates what I've been saying all along about these types of wine. Mm-hmm. They're meant to make you feel fucking sick. You will drink a whole bottle of this and then you'll wake up and be like, oh, I must be allergic to wine. I can't believe this. I think I need to see a doctor.
And it has, like, sulfites in it.
Sulfites, and it just, wine's not good for me. And it's like I keep on going back to this whole idea of saying, it's not the fact that you're allergic to wine. It's the fact that A, you probably had too much of it, and B, like if we killed an entire bottle of this tonight, I probably wouldn't talk to you for 3 days. I'd be killed in terms of I would feel so bad the next day with this stuff. And you can tell, it's like, this is, there's a crazy sugar bomb feel to this. It's just not pleasant.
Yeah. It's like spree candy. I know you've heard that before. It's like spree candy.
But is it supposed to taste like that?
I think it is. I think the American palate, man, it drives me crazy, because I know what a lot of the customers want when they come into the store. They want this wine. They want sugar bombs like this. They want the Josh. They want the Miami. They want those labels that are well known, but produce like very oaky, heavy wines that shouldn't be that way in a sense, right? I feel like I understand why. I've always said this, man. I understand why they're doing it. This is like their flagship wine. This is the wine they're making all of their money on to do other wines, right? To make other wines. It's like when we talked about Post and Beam. They have Farniente. They have all these little projects, and they have their money makers, right? They have their well where they can take their money and they could do their, you know, like their fuck you money, and can do their projects, right? They can say, this is my F you money. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try this wine, or I'm going to take this money that I'm making off this, my number one seller skew mover, and I'm going to try this wine. I get why they do this. I get why they produce it, because some people I know, you know, customers that buy this, mm-hmm. this is what they want. This is what they're clamoring for. The guy that was in my store asking for Miami, he said there was something about it. What did he say? It's full-bodied. It's a full-bodied Pinot.
Pinots are not supposed heavier. To be full-bodied.
And that's my point. But you can't say that, you know, to a customer that really, truly enjoys it. You're wearing a mask. You're smiling and laughing. And I'm going, sir, it's not – I said Pinots are not supposed to taste like that. They're not supposed to be heavy, full-bodied wines. They're not meant to be enjoyed like that. That's not the true nature of a Pinot Noir. But you don't want to argue with customers and pop that balloon on them. You want to let them keep sailing along.
Why not? Because that's exactly why customers say, get me a case of different Pinots, because I'm too used to having the same ones. What would you recommend to the Mayomi drinker? You know, oftentimes it's kind of like if we had a Camus episode. And remember, you know, this is all under the same, like, very successful name, the Wagner family. Camus is a different story, but when we do our Camus episode, I'm going to ask you what other cabs out there are like this. I wouldn't ask you a question like what other Pinots are as delicious as Mayomi. I would ask you what Pinots would you recommend to somebody to say, listen, get away from this shit, get away from this gutter trash, and try something that's a little bit more natural, something that's a little bit more towards Pinot, but will give you the satisfaction of a Mayomi. What would you recommend out there?
But it's the same question. It's like, what would you tell somebody that comes in the store and says, I only drink Mayomi? Well, I have other Pinot Noirs. Well, what do you enjoy about that Mayomi? Oh, well, I enjoy this. Well, Pinot Noir is not supposed to taste like that. It should taste like this. And they go, no, thank you. I'm not interested. I want Mayomi. I only like Mayomi. I only drink Mayomi.
I show them the door. I'd say, listen, get out.
I had a customer one time came to me and wanted Ménage à Trois. And I said, I was like, I don't have it, but I have something else that's better than it. No, I only drink Ménage à Trois. That's why I crack up sometimes when I see these customers and I'm like, guys.
Go to Total Wine. Go to a chain store.
Oh, we have a great time going there. Hey, you know, all these different things. I think the American palate has got to have a revolution. It's got to have like a period of shutting down. And now hopefully we get out of this little COVID thing and we start getting back out there and we start trying different things, because I just think people are trapped in this. It's got to be cheap and it's got to be heavy and it's got to be full bodied. That's the problem.
But you can still get good, cheap wine. Like I always say,
of course.
Instead of trying this, try a Crianza, try a Chianti, try, try maybe – a Pinot from Oregon, try something lighter. But like this to me does not taste like wine. It to me, this vanilla that's in it is so overpowering that I'm like, they put fucking vanilla extract in this. This is not oak. No, there's oak is supposed to be a subtlety, right? It's like, if I almost say to you, like, Floyd, you get these little hints of that fruit or that oak and stuff, and you're like, yeah, that's amazing that you mentioned that, Aaron, versus me saying, like, here's some Hershey's chocolate sauce. You taste chocolate? Like, it's almost like bourbon, right? Like, some of the MPG stuff is so overpowering in its tasting notes, where the really good bourbon is the stuff that's subtle. It just kind of creeps on you.
You're right. It's like things should just creep and be subtle. It shouldn't be overpowering, right? It's like when we tasted Cento, we said it's a wine that didn't know what it wanted to be, right? It was kind of just overly oaked, overly done. And I feel like that was a wine without an identity. This is a wine that has an identity and it knows what it wants to do. At least it has an identity. At least it knows what it's going for. At least it knows the market that it's going for. Cento had no clue. It just said, listen, man, I got 94 points. I'm $15, man. Enjoy. You're getting a steal with me. Naomi over here is going, I want her. I want that mother that drives her kids to school. She's going to come home and need a glass after a long week at work and with the kids.
She'll put this on ice.
She's going to, yeah, it's like she's going to drink a whole bottle this weekend. This is this wine. And I like I said, I always say, I get it. I get the marketing behind
it. It's giving me a headache as we speak. I think I've just de-escalated this from
four. Yeah, like you're going down. Just watching you, I'm like, dude, you look like you're having a rough time.
I'm blushing.
You're blushing. You're happy. You're
got a nosebleed.
But like that's this wine. And it drives me crazy. But I feel we need like kind of like another – we need to go back to the what really matters when it comes to wine. It's like at the heart of it all, it's the creation of something special for people to drink and enjoy. And there's magic behind it. But I feel like with
we've not found it yet.
We haven't found it yet.
Not recently.
But I feel like we'll find it. I think it's going to be there soon.
So if you were to go to Naomi and kick down the door right now and just kind of say, listen, you know, I'm this boutique store owner in New Jersey, but you guys are going to hire me for like, say, $1 million a year, and I'm going to teach you how to improve the quality of this. What would you tell them? What would you have them make note of? What would you change about this wine? Because I kind of feel like they have a cool approach, right? They have a cool approach by going to three different distinct areas and saying, let's wrestle up a bunch of grapes. So is it the fact that they're just screwing the grapes up? Or are the grapes shit to begin with, and they're just kind of doing whatever they can to cocktail American-fy them?
Well, imagine if you're trying to drink wine. Like, imagine if just doing anything, right? So imagine if you were trying to make a big mud bowl. You grab some mud from a wet area, dry area, and a super ultra dry area, right? It's like I've had other wines that have gone three plots in three different parts of California. And they all kind of have this feel. So I was asking the question to you at the beginning. Is it because it's like all these different climates that we're trying to throw these wines into? Is that one of the things? If I went to Miami and I kicked open the door and I said, number one, the first thing I would say is, what's your recipe? What are you doing? Like, what's the secret sauce? What is the secret recipe that you have? Because something is off. First thing I would ask. And then I would want to know, like, why are we throwing three vineyards together that are so far apart? It's not like they're close. If you look on a map, they're not close. Three different kind of regions of California.
Do you think it's them experimenting and saying, we're going to try this experiment for your benefit, the customer? Or do you think it's one of these situations where the Wagners just own so much land that they're like, let's find our shittiest dog shit plots of land, find out what's being grown there, and we'll make it into our flagship wine.
So if
something used to work with this wine, something used to work.
Or maybe they have an upper level. The Wagner family have an upper level wine where they're like, this is our kind of like our premium Pinot Noir, and whatever's left over, we'll just mix it with this. Oh, we'll mix it with Santa Barbara. We'll mix it with Monterey. We'll just throw it all together and just see if it balances out well. It doesn't taste too good. Oh, let's throw some oak in there. Let's just throw some flavors that manipulate the wine. It drives me crazy because I just can't put my finger on most of the wines that I've had, my experience, that are mixed from different vineyards in different parts of somewhere, usually have this kind of quality to it. So I think something is missing, and I think when they taste it, I think they say, let's add something to it. Let's make it worth people to buy. That's what I personally feel. I could be 100% off. I could be way wrong, but that's what I feel. It's like, oh, man, there's something. Hey, Aaron, throw some wood chips in there so we can get that vanilla taste. Oh, why don't you throw some vanilla extract in there? We can make it taste like this. Something's off.
How many times do you think that they've reevaluated or rebranded this wine?
I don't think you need to, in all honesty.
No, I'm asking how many times have they before? Because every time I have it, it's a different thing.
See, I had this years and years ago. years ago where it wasn't like this. It wasn't this heavy. I think they found another theory. I think if we're talking about like conspiracy theories, I think maybe they may, who knows, maybe they ran out of juice. Maybe they needed to blend. Maybe there was a, you know, the fires, maybe something happened where they weren't getting enough production. Maybe it was a bad year. There's too many conspiracy theories with this one because I wouldn't be able to tell you. I think that years ago when I had this, it wasn't like this. Now it's transformed into this beast. It's become something totally different. And I get why they're running with it. Why not? It's a number one seller.
So what would you estimate is the standard or average price for a standard bottle of this?
A 750 will go for, I'm going to say $21.99.
All right. Drizzly has it for $19.99, $19.98, somewhere else. You know, I there's actually a buy right in Deptford that sells it for $11.99. So
$11.99?
Then there's somewhere else that sells it for $14.97. But it has $24.59 delivery attached to it.
Well, there you go. You got to make up the money.
$11.97 Redneck Wine Company. No, this is a $20 bottle of Pinot. And my problem is there's so many good wines that you can get between $20 and $25. I could understand if this was a $12 to $15 bottle. I'd say, you know what? Cool. I think that you're getting cheated out with this wine. I think that it's really hard to imagine that there's really amazing wine out there for $20, like a good Chianti or a good Tempranillo for $20. And then there's this shit.
Well, this is let's say it's $21.99. Ken Wright, their entry level Oregon Pinot Noir is 24 something. I would go, now that I've tasted this and I had my choice between tasting both of them, I would go to Ken Wright in a heartbeat. Ken Wright, at least you know what you're getting with that product, right? You know the Pinot Noir you're getting. You're gonna get this amazing tasting wine. Yes, different states, but a totally different product that comes out. And I think Ken Wright kind of pays attention to the way they produce their wine. I think Miami is just strictly just hitting home runs because they know their market, man. It all goes back to marketing and knowing your customer base. It's like when we talk about Instagram, it's knowing what people want to see from us when we post things. It's maybe I shouldn't post too much wine bottles. Maybe I should post more bourbon, or maybe I'm going to lose those bourbon guys if I keep posting wine stuff. It's this game where I think Miami was saying, screw that. We know what our base is. We're gonna just keep feeding them the red meat. We're going to keep giving them what they want, which is this. But man, years ago, this wasn't that way. This was not the Pinot Noir I drank years ago. But I wouldn't buy this again. I would rather go with a Ken Wright that's $2 more.
Okay.
In a heartbeat. Would you say, if you were walking around the store, you're on a hot date again, would you say
Yo, you got the Miami? This,
you got any Miami in the back? Would you pick this wine up for, if you're going out on a date for dinner, it's a BYOB, would you bring this wine? If no, you know the girl not. Is saying,
absolutely not. Miami. Absolutely not. That's where the bougie side of me would come out and be like, we're not having Miami. You know, and don't get me wrong, like Miami could very well be like a $30 or $40 bottle of wine. I could totally see Camus pulling a bullshit move like that. Like, but there's something about this wine that's way too overbearing. It's too much. It's too aggressive. It's too obnoxious. It tastes less like wine and more like soda pop. I'm ready to get a Coca-Cola right now, mix it in like we did with the
do a cuvée. A cuvée. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Is like
not sitting well with me. You know, no, and it's not. And you know me, it's like
You got like the you know the meat sweats? You have like the wine sweats. You're like, you look like you're breaking down like slowly, like
no, I don't usually get like this either. And this is just what I would call like there's a really bad quality to this wine. And you know, I think that when we get into different kinds of wines, you might hear me get a $100 bottle of something and say I would give it a 6 or a 5 and say this is so disappointing. This is more of a validation that basically when you mass produce something like this, you know, you get crap. And I really hope that certain kinds of winemakers like Camus sort of stop and they say, are we killing our customers? Are we literally giving them shit that's terrible for them, that's going to make them feel terrible, and eventually we're just going to be found out as a brand? Or do we just keep on doing this shit? This is fucking McDonald's wine to me. This is McDonald's Pinot Noir. This is shit chemical wine, and I'm not afraid to say it. And I'm sorry, any scholar or any wine student or any real wine authority that says this is a good wine is being paid by them.
Couldn't have said it better, man. I agree 100% with you.
It's down to a 3. We agree. It's down to a 0.5.
But you know what? In closing, I will definitely have to say this because I think we've kind of hit this one out of the park with this evaluation, this taste testing. The one thing we've been learning about wine now that we've been tasting all these like well-known brands, anything like that, is that we're developing such an appreciation for wines out there, for other wines out there.
Yeah.
We're taking it a different level and just experimenting with different wines and trying different things and saying to ourselves, man, we've had Meiomi. Now we can try this, we can try that, and kind of graduate and just kind of extend our knowledge on wines. But man, this was another great episode for us. Hopefully you don't pass out as soon as we close up.
I'm gonna purge after this one.
Well, thanks so much, everybody.
Hopefully
out there.
The wines that we have this weekend are actually not complete dog shit.
No, I'll say that before we close. Is our next episode, we're going to have some really good stuff we're going to be talking about. But thank you again for listening to Sam and Tom, our podcast with Floyd and Aaron. Just want you guys to check me out on Instagram at Unwind Boutique. And at Sam and Summer Podcast, check out Aaron at The Chosen Vine. You know, follow us, subscribe to the podcast, and thank you very much for listening. Have a great night.